introduce yourself, please.
Will Krause, state senator.
Excellent. To the point. Let's play the open.
This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go. Brian Ellison joining you here from the production studio at KCUR 89.3, where I'm quelling a small rebellion because we have neither coffee nor donuts in the production studio this morning, but the KCUR fund drive is underway, so there's plenty of that out in the next room for afterward. It's good to have Senator Will Krause, who's a Republican from Lee's Summit, with us. We're also joined today by a citizen and by a journalist, Nick Zweifel. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Nick is an IT guy from lives in downtown Kansas City, Missouri, recent transplant. Glad you're there. And CJ Genevieve, my colleague, she is an arts reporter here at KCUR 89.3. Welcome, CJ.
Hi, Brian.
Glad you're here. So first thing we always do, Will, is ask you to tell us a little about your family and about your pets.
Sure. Married my high school sweetheart, Carmen. We have two boys, Tyler and Tanner. Tyler is my oldest. When he graduated high school, he went down to the Army recruiter and took a test called the ASVAB and joined the military. He actually is a mechanic on the Chinook helicopter, which is what I flew for a number of years in the Army Reserves.
Is that a Chinook helicopter on that lapel pin?
That is.
All right.
That is. And so yeah, I'm very proud of his service to our country and what he's doing in his life. My other son is Tanner. He is a senior at Summit Christian Academy, played football and got a couple awards with that, with the conference and all district. Very proud of him. He's just been accepted into two colleges, Evangel and Southwest Baptist University. He just got a $10,000 scholarship for Southwest Baptist. Don't know exactly where he's going to go,
okay,
but I'm very proud of him and what he's getting ready to do in life.
He is not going to your alma mater.
That's right. We were talking about that earlier, and I graduated from UCM, and most of my family graduated from UCM, and he has made it very clear that that is not in the cards.
So, Will, how'd you get involved in politics in the first place?
I was in flight school, and I was frustrated with the federal government, was complaining about it, and my wife, which I believe that God speaks through her and gives the encouraging words that I need to hear, said, you either need to shut up or run for office. And so I took that as a pretty big sign that maybe I should look into future political office. And several years later, I decided to run for city council. And then I got deployed to Iraq, withdrew from that race. And then actually, while I was in Iraq, my wife got my campaign kicked off for the Missouri State House. And at that point, I defeated an incumbent to move into the House in 2005. The race was in 2004.
Served there for a while. Now you're in the Senate.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, we have lots to talk about. Missouri pre-filing season is underway. Lots of bills, including some from you, Will, and we'll talk about that. But let's first go around the table and see what's on the mind of our panel. Nick Zweifel, what are you thinking about today?
Well, anytime the topic of politics come up, I really have to think about my peers and what would it take to get a group of my friends on a Friday night after work at a happy hour to get them to talk about local politics. Sitting right next to a legislator, I would want to know, like, what would you tell us? Like, how would you get our attention
to get them engaged in politics?
Or even on an issue that's happening right now, something that we should be paying attention to.
So I think the number one thing that affects most people is income. And I think that when you look at how our states are made, I think economic development and jobs. So if you're interested in making sure Missouri is growing and the jobs are there for them and for their kids and other generations, I think that that's what, how you get people more engaged in politics, is make it personal and make it about the employment. And I think Missouri is lagging behind other states on that. And so we need to move forward and change the direction on a number of things. And that's what I've been doing in the General Assembly on tax policy and some number of other things. And so that's how I would try to get them engaged. But I also would ask them what their concerns are and what issues are important to them. Because I think I find that when I talk about issues that they care about, they're more engaged than me talking about tax policy. A lot of people's tax policy, that's boring. But some people, that's a major issue.
Very good. CJ Genevieve, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, I'm interested in this conversation that we're having. And I think, you know, when I think about, a state legislature's probably number one job is to pass a budget every year. You know, jobs are certainly part of that, and tax policy is where that intersects with state senators and legislators. I'm curious what you think are the, number one ways in which the General Assembly can assist the people of Missouri through the budget process?
I would say the number one thing that we should make sure we're focusing our spending, our energy and money on is education. I think education is key for making sure people have a means to provide for themselves. And I think that you can build yourself out of poverty if you have an education. So I think that when we as a state look at our budget and where our priorities are, we need to make sure that education is at the top, one of those top areas. And I think that most people that have kids are concerned about the funding for education.
Give us a couple more. I mean, what else is important, do you think, out of the state budget? Education is usually the biggest item in the mm-hmm. budget. It's the one people argue about the most. We've seen that on the Kansas side recently as well. What else is sort of crucially important out of
it? So I think infrastructure is another area that we should make sure that, I mean, I'm a limited government Republican. I believe government should only be serving certain functions. And so infrastructure is obviously one of those functions that we need to make sure we look at. And obviously the areas that I would say is law enforcement, infrastructure, and education are the areas where I see our priorities for government.
Well, I do want to talk about some of what's coming up in the 2016 legislative session. We're at sort of this point between sessions, but December 1st was the beginning of the pre-filing period. You yourself filed a couple of bills, more than a couple. There have been hundreds of bills filed these last couple of weeks. But a couple that you filed deal with voting procedures and mm-hmm. election fraud. I want to talk about the photo ID bill first. You would require photo ID for all voters. Tell us about that.
So
tell us why.
We've been trying to pass a voter ID bill in the state of Missouri for 10 years. In 2006 was one of our first bills, and actually the courts threw it out. And so we're having to come back, and we have a new philosophy. We're going to ask the voters in the state of Missouri to put in the Constitution allowing the General Assembly to require a photo ID. So it's really in May the General Assembly have procedures on photo ID. And so that's the first step. And
so the last one was thrown out because it conflicted with the state constitution.
They said it was unconstitutional because it was a poll tax.
So now you're going to change the state you're trying to ask folks to change the state constitution to allow this.
Right. Here's the thing is we have 6 million people in the state of Missouri. 5.8 have IDs. Why are we not using those IDs to verify who's coming and voting? And people say, well, there's no fraud out there. Well, let me tell you, in April of this year, there were 27 people that voted from an abandoned building owned by the city. I mean, if no one's cheating, if no one wants to change the outcome of elections, why is that happening? And they're investigating that, and that mayor was not sworn in, and there's some questions going on about that. So there are people that are willing to go to whatever length it is to cheat elections. And that's why I think it's important and imperative for us to try to secure that election process.
Do you worry that some voters could be disenfranchised? I mean, you obviously, you know, there's going to be some cases of voter fraud that, or maybe not obviously, but that could happen. But is there a cost on the other side? Are you worried that some people who might otherwise be allowed to vote, be legally permitted to vote, won't get to vote?
Absolutely not. I think there is a way we can work this out to where everyone has the ability to vote, and yet we still protect the safeguard of the election. I think I'm more worried about the people that want to cheat elections and have an impact on those elections and disenfranchise all the voters that have done it the right way by cheating and having more people go down and vote illegally.
How worried are you about it?
Very. I'm very concerned. I've been to Iraq and I fought for our country and our rights, and I want to make sure we protect the election process, because it's that important to make sure that the right people win elections. We have a state representative that ran and won by one vote in a primary, and turned around 2 years later, uncle pled guilty, aunt paid a fine. That's two people that probably voted for their nephew, and that election was decided by one vote. And elections are sometimes very close. We need to make sure that if there are questionable behavior that's going on, that we investigate and prosecute that voter fraud.
Nick, you look like you have a thought.
I just think this topic is one of these topics that can really quickly like turn off a conversation at happy hour after Friday after work, just because the rhetoric around this is something that we hear. It's consistent and it's loud. We have simply put the left saying this additional restrictions or more making it harder to vote is going to disenfranchise people. And then we have the other side talking about, well, we really need to protect against voter fraud. I think this conversation could benefit from a great deal of empathy, because I think both are pretty practical positions to hold. So my question around this is just, why haven't we seen legislation come forward that actually speaks to both concerns? Like, what would it take to file a bill that would do something like you're talking about, requiring photo ID, but also extend something to the other side of the argument and do something that would statistically show to improve voter turnout or reduce the burden, such as extending early voting, something like that, something to bring both sides together. Like, oh, okay, that may be a way forward with this. Why haven't we seen that?
We actually have. In 2011, when we passed this same process, we actually had, I believe in the bill, we actually had the ability to early vote. I think you hear the rhetoric, you just don't hear the compromise that's going on behind the scenes. And I am more than willing to work with anybody that wants to find a mechanism in place to make sure that no one is disenfranchised. And I think that the mechanism I would use, and maybe my counterparts to the left wouldn't agree with me, is allowing that if a person doesn't have an ID for a signature, as long as it matches the signature that's on record, that vote would count. So it'd be a provisional ballot. They would look at the signatures, and if the signatures matched, then that vote would still count. And like I said, there's 6 million people, 5.8 have IDs. I mean, we have to have an ID to get a library card. You have to have an ID to get welfare benefits. So at some point, you got to say that this in today's society, almost everybody has IDs. Regardless, I mean, to cash a check, you have to have an ID. So I look at the things you have to have an ID for, and I think, why are we not requiring an ID to go vote?
I think, but just to sort of hammer on this topic for a little bit, this is a topic that gets headlines. And I think we all know that. I think that's what Nick was alluding to a little bit, is that, you know, when you hear someone talking about voter ID laws, it sort of presses on all these sensitive social issues and the specter of voter fraud. And in the two examples that you cited, it seems to me like law enforcement mechanisms worked. I mean, the people were discovered and they're in the legal process. And to me, as a citizen, the much larger problem with our democracy is voter turnout. The much larger problem in state government is that most people don't even know who their state rep is or their state senator. And so what I would love to see in the headlines is someone saying, I went to Iraq. I fought for the freedoms that we hold so dear. I want everybody to vote. And so here's what I'm going to do to promote that. And meanwhile, we're going to ask you to show your ID also. And I think that, you know, in these sort of rhetorically divisive times, that's what some of us are, you know, troubled by, is we don't see that kind of encouragement to participate at the same time as we're seeing this sort of scary headline, like if you forget your ID, you're not going to be able to vote.
I agree with you. And actually, in most states that have passed voter ID, turnout has gone up in similar elections. So if you look at similar elections, Kansas was just recently, they passed voter ID, and there was a study out that said that voter turnout went down. Well, they didn't compare apples to apples. They compared a non-presidential to a presidential, and that's not fair. But if you go back and you look at the similar election, voter turnout actually went up after voter ID passed. So to that concern, I'm with you. And I'd love to see if I can get headlines with, I fought for our country in Iraq, and I want to make sure everyone has that right to vote. I'll see if that works in the headlines as we move forward.
Well, what about if you propose same-day registration?
You know, I think that opens up the possibility for more fraud, because people will vote absentee somewhere else and then say, oh, I moved and I need to register to vote, and they forgot that they already voted. And so there's potential for more voter fraud going on with same day registration. I think that one of the things that's good about our process in Missouri is we lock it in, and we then be able to print those poll books, and we know who has registered to vote in that area. So we safeguard the election from having people vote in multiple polling locations.
But I think those same safeguards could apply after the fact. If you had same day registration, then, you know, if there was an election that looked strange for whatever reason, you have that documentation. You can go back and look.
Yeah, and I know Secretary of State Kobach is actually prosecuting, I think, 3 cases of duplicate voting where they voted in the state of Kansas and they voted in another state. And that's something that they're working on. And I think that we in the state of Missouri should be looking at. I hate to keep pounding on voter fraud and those cases, but the fact of the matter is, and the reason why I cited those cases earlier was because people say that there's no fraud. And I'm like, well, these are 2 cases right here in the state of Missouri where fraud has been identified. I think fraud is often not caught because it's hard to catch. How do you catch a person that comes in with a utility bill and says, I'm John Smith and I'm here to vote? And they look at the utility bill, the address is correct. They have no way to confirm or deny that he is John Smith. And so that's why I think there's some fraud that goes on that we aren't catching.
You mentioned Secretary of State Chris Kobach over on the Kansas side. Mm-hmm. We've talked with him on KCUR a number of times. He's worked on legislation that's pretty similar to some of what you're proposing here. Is that where the idea comes from? Have you and he talked about this?
He and I have talked about a number of issues before. I actually looked at what they are doing in Kansas as far as being able to investigate and prosecute. And we actually have a bill that we filed that allows the Secretary of State to do that in the state of Missouri. And there's very limited investigative powers that we've given the Secretary of State. And I found out in the initiative petition process that there was rampant signature fraud on, that people were like, hey, who's going to write the probable cause statement for this? And the sheriff didn't know how to write it, and the prosecutors were busy. And so they looked at the Secretary of State, and he basically said, our current Missouri Secretary of State said, we don't have the authority to write probable cause. So we put that in this bill as well, because we think that it's important to be able to investigate and prosecute every bit of fraud. And I think all too often it's not done because it slips through the cracks. And it's not a violent crime. It's not a crime on a person. It just, to me, it hurts the process. And when people find out that someone cheated the election process, they're like, why go vote? I mean, why should I go vote when somebody else is going to cheat the election and take it away from us?
You mentioned the Secretary of State, Jason Kander, who actually has said that he doesn't support your proposal. He said that he doesn't want the office to have that power. It doesn't need that power, that local prosecutors have done a fine job of prosecuting fraud in the rare cases where it occurs. What do you say to that? Why would you disagree? He's the incumbent.
I respect him. I would highly disagree. You know, in the state of Missouri, we have 114 counties, and some of those counties are very small. And I would say that some of those prosecutors don't have resources because they are very small in nature and there's limited funds. And then we have some very large counties that have lots of crime and violent crimes and crimes against individuals. And so I think those prosecutors may be looking at, I've got all these cases and I'm going to stop working on this rape case to take care of voter fraud. They're going to say, no, that voter fraud case has less importance. So what I'm saying with this bill is, if the local prosecutor doesn't have the resources or chooses not to spend their resources on this, I believe somebody should. And I think that's the Secretary of State, because they're the chief election officer in the state of Missouri.
Let me just push back a little. And of course, we should probably mention at this point that you're a candidate for the Republican nomination for Secretary of State in 2016. But it is a partisan office. It's a statewide elected office attached to a political party. Prosecutors function in a different way at the county level than a statewide elected office holder. Don't you worry about the danger of sort of political repercussions to that kind of prosecution as opposed to what county prosecutors do?
You know, here's two things. Number one, I don't care who does the voter fraud. If it's a Republican, if I'm so lucky to be the next Secretary of State and we have this power, we will prosecute every bit of voter fraud. That doesn't matter if it's Republican or Democrat. And number two is, it's a political office, the Secretary of State's office, but the way I'm going to run elections is I'm going to have a Republican and a Democrat both working in that elections process, because we have county clerks that are Republicans and Democrats, and I want to make sure that they have the resource to come to the state Secretary of State's office to get the information that they need. Another thing I'm going to do is I'm going to have a person from a small county as one of those, and I'm going to have a person from a large county. I want to make sure that we are able to serve the people of the state of Missouri, and we have the expertise in the Secretary of State's office when it comes to elections to be able to answer questions and help the local election authorities handle those problems that they may have.
So let me ask you about another set of bills that got pre-filed.
Okay.
You'll be dealing with those come the new year. Several bills involved guns. Guns have been very much in the news nationally. One of the pre-filed bills came out of St. Louis, would tighten restrictions and background checks around buying guns in light of some of the tragedies we've all seen. Will Republicans in the Senate, will you support making it more difficult to obtain assault weapons in Missouri?
I believe that our gun control laws are already in place. I think that the key for us is making sure citizens have the right and the ability to protect themselves. I think that if you look at a lot of these crimes, they happen in areas where people are not allowed to conceal carry or protect themselves. And so I want to make sure our citizens in the state of Missouri have the ability to protect themselves. So more gun control, not likely to happen through the Missouri General Assembly.
Nick, what do you think about that?
As a citizen that is witnessing a lot of these tragedies that we're seeing on a frequent basis, I think it's probably tough to say that you would be comfortable with the status quo.
I would change?
Yeah. What would you change?
What I would change is I'd go on the offensive. I was just listening the other day to Mayor Giuliani. He was saying the reason why this is happening, he was the mayor of New York during the 9/11 attack. The reason this is happening is our current president has put us on the defense. We should be on the offense on these terror attacks. We need to be going after these people that are coming here and attacking us in the United States and in Paris and other countries. That's what I would change. That's at the federal level. At the state level, we can't do that. But that's my concern is we've put the United States in harm because we're not on the offensive enough. And we need to go back on the offensive.
So, wait, I'm sorry. I'd like for you
to go after the terrorists. Go after ISIS and take them out versus allowing them to build and plan and execute attacks on us. We need to go seek them out and destroy them on their ground before they come here and attack innocent lives.
So are you suggesting, you know, more troops in places around the world to do that?
If that's what it takes, yes. If that's what it takes to protect Missourians and citizens that have done nothing wrong from these terror attacks, absolutely.
But to come back to
as a soldier, I'll be glad to go. I will be glad to go to defend this country and innocent lives anywhere in the world.
How does increased access to assault weapons or not exercising more in the way of gun control in Missouri what does that have to do with protecting us from terrorists?
We're disguising the problem by talking about guns here in the United States. The fact of the matter is, who's doing these terror attacks? There are terrorists here, and they're coming and they're attacking individuals. So that's what it has to do with guns.
Sure,
control.
But like the shooting at the Planned Parenthood clinic wasn't from ISIS terrorists. The shooting at the theater in Colorado wasn't from ISIS terrorists. Shootings on college campuses have not been ISIS terrorists. So some of the concern about gun control isn't about worldwide terrorism.
Sir, you just summarized the three, and if you notice about all of those are places you cannot conceal carry. Maybe opening it up to allow individuals to protect themselves in those environments might actually help people protect themselves and fire back. I mean, I think as a citizen, I want to be able to protect my family and my loved ones, and being able to have the ability to do that is important.
Sorry, I jumped in there, CJ.
Sorry, I was interrupting you also. I mean, I was going to make the same point about you know, the San Bernardino situation appears to be, you know, unusual from the other mass shootings in America that we've seen. And I just logically have a hard time thinking that, you know, one of these clearly mentally disturbed people who's planning to go shoot up a theater or a grade school is thinking, maybe I won't do this because the teachers have concealed carry in these schools. I just feel like that's we're dealing with a serious, complicated problem in American society. And I don't think that sort of defaulting to allowing more concealed carry is going to solve that problem.
When we limit gun control, what are we doing? We're doing a situation where we're taking guns out of law-abiding citizens' hands. Do those same people that are making these attacks, are they not going to have the weapons? Are they not going to get the weapons in some form or fashion? I mean, we can take and put more laws on the law-abiding citizens, but what are we going to do with these people that are breaking the law? They're already breaking the law. I mean, don't you think that they're going to be able to get a weapon somehow? So at some point, I try to understand, what can we do to make sure we protect ourselves? And people that are breaking the law are going to break the law anyways. I mean, what we're trying to do is put more laws on law-abiding citizens, and I don't see that solving the problem. And so my earlier assessment is go on the offensive, go after these individuals that are trying to cause harm on our citizens.
Would you advocate doing that for example, more funding for mental health services in the state?
I absolutely think we need to make sure we do more funding for mental health services. I think that we need to help those people that can't help themselves. And that is a perfect example of where we as a government entity should be focusing some of our energy and efforts.
So another of those pre-filed bills, and I think you might have been alluding to this one a moment ago, would actually make it easier to carry concealed weapons on university campuses. Currently, they're banned from the University of Missouri. Mm-hmm. Senator, your colleagues Bob Dixon and Brian Munslinger have both proposed a bill that would require the university to allow them. You would support that?
Senator Dixon, actually, I've heard him speak about this, and he brings up a story. He goes, on one side of the street, a woman can carry. On the other side, they're a student in on a university campus and cannot carry. So it's okay if she's, you know, she's able to protect herself off campus with a weapon, but she's not able to protect herself on campus. That arbitrary line that says this is a gun-free zone puts that woman at risk. So, I support my colleagues' the concept of allowing an individual to carry to protect themselves.
What do you think the chances are for that bill in the current environment in the General Assembly?
I would give it a 75% chance, but passing a bill is not easy. So there's always ways to derail and stop something from happening. So as I say 75%, there's a chance that it may not happen this year.
Nick Zweifel, you're closer to having been on a college campus as a student than the rest of us here, although I guess CJ and I work on one here at at KCUR. But, how do you feel about that? Would you have wanted there to be more concealed weapons around you in your classrooms, in your dorms?
Look, I have a lot of friends that are gun owners, responsible gun owners, feel very comfortable with a firearm, would feel safer with a firearm. But at the same time, I think probably a lot more friends that don't own a gun, don't know how to handle a gun, would feel very uncomfortable if they knew potentially that they had friends that they're not sure know how to handle a gun or have good judgment. I think especially college campuses, we've seen even the University of Missouri this past year, there was a lot of contentious issues and some really, I think, unique and just important confrontations happening for our democracy on that campus. It would have been really tragic if someone had a legally concealed weapon and made a bad decision to use that. So that's the type of fear that comes through my mind.
So I go back to the fact that if somebody's going to do you harm, does it matter if you're on campus or off campus? And the lawbreakers, if you will, they're going to do what they are intending to do. I understand your concern about the availability and the gun being more present. I do understand that concept, but I go back to the fact that we have people that are breaking the laws, and they're going to break the law regardless. And you're trying to keep law-abiding citizens from protecting themselves. And so I'm gonna default to the law. Law-abiding citizens and allowing them the rights that they have. And so I think maybe the solution is more education, making sure people understand the impact if they end up, bringing that firearm out and causing harm to someone. The fact that they are likely to end up in prison because they did that is where it stands. Education is important.
I know there's other bills coming up. Mm-hmm. You actually mentioned a couple of things at the top of the show about infrastructure and so mm-hmm. on. What are the other pre-filed bills that you think are probably critical and we're going to be hearing more about?
So I know that transportation funding will be discussed. Now, the question is we've discussed transportation funding probably for closer to a decade, and funding is always hard to come by. And we had a three-quarters cent increase in sales tax, and the voters said no to that. And so we've been struggling with how can we pay for and continue to provide the infrastructure in roads. And so I know that there's a couple proposals out there right now that have been introduced. I think Senator Schaaf has introduced a 3.5 cent diesel tax increase and a 1.5 on gas. And then I think there's another senator representative that has just done a 2 cent fuel gas tax increase. And those are both would go to the vote of the people, I think. Or we could potentially do both of those in-house as well. Because it's within the range that we as a legislator could actually pass.
And would you support doing that?
I am not for a tax increase
in an election year?
Yes, I am not for tax increases. I believe that the best solution would be to potentially move the Highway Patrol out of the MoDOT funding, and that would free up about $390 million. And that would address our concerns with infrastructure. I don't think that would solve our I-70 rebuild situation, but I've heard some interesting discussions about maybe building toll roads for a new two-lane new toll road, leaving the existing there for anybody that currently is out there. But if you want to pay a toll, you can get on this two-lane and potentially reduce or
for a pothole free ride, you can pay a little more
or be able to drive a little faster.
Yeah.
So there's another situation there. Those discussions are out there. I'm interested in hearing what my colleagues have to say and moving forward. But as far as Will Krause is concerned, I am not for increasing taxes on Missourians, even in the form of a gas tax.
I want to just ask you, we're not really covering the 2016 election per se yet. We're talking with sitting legislators, and you are one of those. But we can't ignore the fact that you're a candidate for the for the Secretary of State office. And one of the things that we have talked about with many representatives and senators sitting in that chair is campaign finance, ethics laws in Missouri. Missouri, of course, has unlimited campaign contributions. How big an issue do you think that's going to be in the next session? And obviously, you'll probably be talking about it as a candidate for Secretary of State, the chief elections official. Are there particular policy proposals that you would support to change the way elections are funded in Missouri?
Campaigns are funded. I would tell you that I've been wrong on this issue. I have supported campaign contribution limits, and I was 100% wrong. And the reason why I was wrong is we need to know where people are getting the resources to run their campaigns. And when you have limits, all you're doing is saying that that's a limited amount of money that you can take. There are these continuing committees and there are super PACs. If you look at the federal level, there are limits that you can give to a federal candidate. But almost everybody running for president has a super PAC. So there's money going into that super PAC and you can't see where money is coming from and where the candidate's getting all their resources. And there's people that give money to continuing committees and then funnel around and get back to the candidate. So I believe the way for us to understand this issue, the best way is transparency. And unlimited campaign contributions allows us to see if $1 million check is being cut to somebody or a $100,000 check for some reason.
When did you change your mind about this?
It's been probably 18 months, maybe 2 years ago.
Okay.
So I was supportive, and I actually sponsored a bill to put campaign contribution limits out there. And so, there's only one person that's ever been perfect, and that's Jesus Christ. And I am not Jesus, and I will tell you I've made mistakes.
Well, I mean, okay, in the name of transparency then, I mean, you said about 18 months ago, maybe 2 years ago you changed your mind. Also about 18 months ago, you got a contribution from Rex Zinkfeld for $100,000. He, of course, would agree with you that there should not be limits on campaign contributions. How does that play in?
And it doesn't.
Do you not...
mean, to my decision, that had nothing to do. That's the rules right now as we play.
It is.
I mean, our governor is for limits, but yet he's taking large donations. And a lot of my Democrat counterparts are for limits, according to what they say. But they're taking unlimited contributions right now, large
contributions. Because that's the rules, as you said, that right. Everyone plays by at the moment.
Exactly. So, I mean, my past donors have nothing to do with my position on this. I believe, it's easy path to say, it's popular to say that campaign contribution limits. But the fact is everybody in politics knows about the continuing committees and the fact that money is given to different areas and then comes back to different candidates. So I think transparency outweighs not knowing where that money's coming from. And if Rex or anybody else is writing a $100,000 check or $1 million check, I think the people of the state of Missouri can know that easier now than trying to see where that money all comes from.
Do you think that doesn't have some influence, and I don't mean just on you. I mean on any candidate of any party who takes $100,000 or $250,000 from one person. I mean, does that not give that person some influence because of the money they contribute?
No, because right now there are continuing committees that are taking $500,000 that are going to be doing different ads on different candidates for different reasons. So they have nothing to do necessarily with a candidate, but they can still, a continuing committee can take an unlimited contribution. And you could put limits on them, but then what you're going to do is you're just going to have somebody create 100 different committees. And the union structure is already set up that way. If you go and every union has a PAC. So the Democrats already have a way to funnel their money to their candidates by giving to all these different PACs, which then would give to the different candidates. And so, I mean, at one point when we had limits, Republicans, there were different committees set up and good government committees, and you have to try to track where they get their donations.
What I'm hearing you say then is a little bit contradictory to what I think the theme of the conversation around like the Missouri legislature ethics is that we're actually better off right now because we have more transparency.
I think that you know where the money's coming from. And if somebody is getting money from any major donor, you can see it. And without that, you're going to have people giving to continuing committees, which then would come back to that candidate or be spent on a candidate on their behalf in a different manner. But yeah, I think that Missourians are better off because they can see where that money's coming from.
Let's go one more time around the table. Let's go start with CJ Janovy.
I'm just interested in what you think are going to be the biggest budgetary challenges in the session and what you hope to do about them.
The biggest budgetary challenges as we move forward are going to be like Medicaid always continues to grow faster and faster than any other part of the budget. And so that's going to be a challenge for us to continue to fund a system that continues to grow at that pace. And what we're going to have to do is sit down and determine what is our priority. And I believe I've already told you my priority would be education. I think mental health is another challenge. They have always fighting to keep the resources that are going to them. Full disclosure, my dad had bipolar, and I understand mental health issues a little bit more than others. But I'd say those three areas, mental health, Medicaid, and education are the areas where we're going to continue to struggle to make sure they have the resources to be to fund their programs.
Would you then consider Medicaid expansion for Missouri?
I am not for Medicaid expansion. I think that what Medicaid expansion would be doing is expanding able-bodied adults. I want to help those individuals that cannot help themselves. Able-bodied adults have the ability to go out and get a job. I want to encourage that. I don't want to give them another reason to stay at home and not try to better themselves with employment.
Well, Krause, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Really appreciate it. Now, as you probably know, we try to get to know all of our guests on this program a little better by asking them to suggest the song that will close the show. It can be your favorite. It can be something that seems appropriate for the moment.
So what song? One of my favorite songs is God Bless the USA by Lee Greenwood.
All right. I think we can come up with that. Thanks so much, and thanks for being here.
Hey, Brian, thank you for having me.
And thanks to Nick Zweifel from downtown Kansas City, Missouri, and CJ Janovy. Thanks so much. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can find us on iTunes or on kcur.org/statehouseblend. If you use Twitter, that's a great way to keep up on the show and the news from Jeff City and Topeka, too. I'm at PTS Brian. You can follow my co-host, Sam Zeff. He's at Sam Zeff. We use the hashtag Statehouse Blend. You can find a shorter version of us on the air on Tuesday mornings as part of Up to Date at 11 a.m. on KCUR, so listen in for that. And if you'd like to be the citizen guest like Nick was today, or you have any other thoughts, shoot me an email, brian@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. See you next time.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died.